is Shauna Lynn Panchesi. Shauna is an award-winning hand lettering artist and illustrator, and has worked with clients like International Delight, Publix, Fortune Magazine, and The Wall Street Journal. I talk with her about everything from studying opera in college, to figure skating as an adult, to dealing with anxiety, right after this. Epicurrence, coming from joining the words epic and occurrence, was always intended to be different. Epicurrence the Montoose is the same way, just a little shorter. Held March 6th through 9th in beautiful Lake Tahoe, California at North Star, the Montoose is a three-day jam session of creative discussions, inspirations, relationships, and adventures. You'll enjoy daily knowledgeable talks, encouraging stories, incredible food, and time on the mountain for skiing and snowboarding. Basically, it's a unique experience you'd find in the organic aisles of conferences. At Epicurrence the Montoose, the focus is on you and the relationships you build with other attendees. The main goal is to get you re-inspired to create better work that comes with incredible benefits like learning new techniques and skills to manage your work life while gaining lifelong relationships. Sure, there are epic activities, but ultimately it's the discussions and knowledge that you take away that set it apart. There are only 2 weeks before the Montoose, but you can still go. Request an invite today at montoose.com. That's M-O-N-T-U-E-S.com.
Thanks for having me.
So let's jump right into it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you growing up?
Me growing up. Okay.
Yeah. What? Start from the beginning.
Well, I was born on January 4th. I grew up in a household where my dad was a dentist and my mom was the office manager for the business. They ran their own business for a very long time before they about 5 or 6 years ago, I think, sold to a company called Heartland. And now he still works in the same building, just under that corporation. But I grew up watching them run their own business. And, you know, they're very, very good at what they do. And but growing up, there was never any pressure on me to take over the family business, which was really nice. They let me explore what I wanted to do. And they could tell early on that I really enjoyed art and that I really enjoyed, you know, I loved things that were artistic, that were crafty and allowed me to have a lot of expression. And so like when I was 3, my mom caught me drawing on the wall. I was a very quiet kid and she hadn't heard from me in a while. And she's on the phone. And so I don't remember if she was still on the phone when she found me or if she hung up, but she walked out and she goes, "Shauna, what have you done?" And apparently I was in such a world, you know, my own little world, that she said that and I went, "Ah!" And she goes, "What did you do?" and she goes, "You know, this is really pretty." She goes, "But you know what would have been better?" And I said, "What, Mama?" She said, "If you'd drawn it on paper so that I could keep it, but tell me about it." And we have this picture that she took of the drawing. She goes, "I don't remember what your story was." She goes, "You had a very elaborate story for it." She goes, "But I had to paint over it." And in the photo, there's a bottle of Fantastic on the ground.
Oh, nice.
So she did try to clean it, but it was permanent marker and there's only so much you can do. And I think my dad got home that night and she's like, "Shauna drew on the wall." But I did get very lucky. You know, my parents were very supportive of my passions. Anytime I wanted to take any sort of art class, they found a way to make it happen. So I grew up taking, what did I do? I did a couple art camps. I know there was one where it was like an art camp where you tried like 5 different things in a day and it was a whole week long thing. So I did photography. I think ceramics was in there, painting, drawing, a little bit of printmaking with like the styrofoam blocks. Photography consisted of doing the pinhole cameras, but I ended up finding out actually I couldn't do photography because at the time there was no digital photography. It was all traditional and the chemicals would give me such massive migraines that I decided, I'm like, I can't go in that direction. And
I had the same issue in college when we would go into the dark room. I couldn't figure out for the longest time why I would feel bad afterwards.
Yeah. Well, it was weird because I'd walk out and I'm like, "I have a headache. Do you guys have headaches?" They're like, "No, we're fine." Maybe it's just maybe some people have more of a sensitivity to the chemicals or something.
Could be. I get the same thing with like rubber cement too.
Oh yeah. So, well, that stuff's strong.
Mm-hmm. Get a buzz and a headache.
Yeah. The easiest way to get high. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, so I did take a lot of like art camps growing up. I volunteered at this place called Art House in Daytona. It's a nonprofit organization. I was a volunteer for the art camp for a couple years and got to play around with a lot of things. And the two ladies that worked there when I was there one summer came in and they're like, we're going to challenge you to something. I said, what's that? They're like, we want you to make Starry Night out of tissue paper.
Huh.
So that whole summer I took foam core, which I learned warps. So I had a curved painting.
Nice.
But I made Starry Night out of tissue paper, and they showed it at the kids' end of the year, let's celebrate your work gallery show thing. So that was really fun. And then I went into high school. You know, when I was in high school, I did choir in addition to art. And initially got into choir because my friend growing up didn't want to take choir alone. And so she called me the night before we were choosing because I was going to do art and business.
So you were there for moral support.
I was there for moral support and then discovered I could sing. So it was an interesting thing that happened because she's like, I don't want to do choir alone. Do choir with me. And I'm like, oh, I was going to do this. She goes, no, just do it with me. It'll be fun. Okay. And I had been tone deaf up till that point. Like my mom was like, you're doing choir? Really? And ultimately, when I graduated high school, I got into the opera program at the University of North Florida, stuck with it for a semester. And I was sick the whole time and I hated practicing. And I figured, you know what, if I ever want to sing, I don't have to do it as a career. I can always go do community theater or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I did choir.
Go to the karaoke bar and show everybody up.
Exactly. I actually hate doing karaoke. I
think everyone does.
I hate singing in front of people. Actually, it's the scariest thing for me. Like I can get up and talk in front of 400 people before I'll get up and sing in front of 400 people.
Oh, my wife's the same way. She did choir in college. And, you know, as long as she was hidden in the group, she was fine. But if she ever had to solo, she just hates it.
Yeah. And it's so funny because like I had one of my good friends asked me to sing the Ave Maria at her wedding about a year and a half ago. And at that point, I hadn't done any sort of singing in front of anybody in years. And she goes, well, I just remember you walking down the streets of Italy, just belting out opera. I'm like, yeah, cause I was probably partially drunk part of that trip. And I mean, there was wine everywhere.
Yeah.
But I do remember though, like I'd be walking down streets and I'd just be quietly singing to myself and someone would walk up and they're like, you can sing? I'm like, you heard me? Oh, sorry. But I did sing the Ave at her wedding and my knees were shaking. I was terrified out of my mind. And, so I stood behind the piano. So most of the people that were at that wedding had no idea someone was actually singing. They just thought it was a soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And so when we got to the reception, my friend goes, you need to meet Shauna. This is the girl that was singing. And they go, wait, that wasn't just a CD. And she goes, no, she was singing. I'm like, yeah, I stood behind the piano because I hate being in front of people like that. But so that's like the last time I actually sang in front of people. There's a chance maybe at like Creative South something might happen if I get a little bit tipsy. I may just like start singing, but we'll see. But
I'm doing the evil finger tap right now.
Yeah. But, you know, it's something fun that, you know, I really enjoyed doing. But while I did that, I also had done art. And I was in the IB program, so I got out of having to do gym all through high school, which was fantastic.
Nice.
Because I hated gym. So I had to take my freshman year, I took computer graphics, and I brought home one of my projects once. My dad goes, wait, you did this? I said, yeah. He goes, you need to go into graphic design. And that was the first time I'd ever heard what graphic design was. And come to find out that was initially going to be my dad's plan. And then,
really?
Yeah. And then things happened and he went into dentistry.
It's an interesting switch between things.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny cause like my entire family is really not artistically inclined. My mom can doodle really well. My younger sister actually can draw pretty decently as well. She makes like little comics and things at times. Mm-hmm. My dad can draw, but it's funny because we've traced it back to like this one line of people, and it's my dad's side, and it's his dad, his grandfather. So like but all of them were also medical professionals. Like my great grandfather was a surgeon in the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was a heart surgeon, he was a surgeon in the States, but he brought over techniques from the Ukraine to the States. And one of the coolest things I actually found out was he was able to do an appendectomy in 5 minutes. Oh. It was like 5 or 6 minutes. So what he'd do is he'd do the appendectomy, and the hospital would be charging them for 30 minutes. And so in order to make it look like it took longer than it did, he'd do it, and then he'd go into the back and have a cup of coffee.
Nice.
Because he didn't want to walk out and be like, I'm done, and then say like, well, why am I paying for 30 minutes worth of surgery? But his techniques were so good that he introduced them to the States, and they were adopted in, and it was really interesting. But he would go home and he'd build things. So we had Barbie cars when we were kids. My dad and my uncle had a Batmobile.
Nice.
And it was like built from scratch. And somehow I think he had connections to a guy that had motors. So there's old whole movies of my dad and my uncle driving the Batmobile down the road.
Nice.
So it does. We figured out it comes from that one line. But I always remember like my grandma who passed away in May. Mm-hmm. Used to come up to me when we'd go visit, and she'd see me doodling on the couch because it'd be, you know, 10 degrees and not fit to go outside. And she'd go, Shauna, where did you get that artistic talent from? You didn't get that from me. And that's how she talked.
By the way, very nice Midwest accent.
Oh, I'm full of them. That is one thing that does come out when I'm having fun around people. Like, I'll just pull it out and people are like, where the heck did that come from? I'm like, oh, you know, all the cheeseheads and all the good stuff that they all like to do. but my whole family's from Chicago and, you know, Wisconsin.
Mine is too.
And so that accent's made its way into my life.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I grew up in that part of the country, so I definitely recognize that as home.
Yeah. You know it well. Well, and it's,
yes.
And it's funny because my entire immediate family, we can all impersonate my grandmother. And so we do it right back at her. And she's like, I don't sound like that. I'm like, yeah, you do. but the funniest thing was at the wake. I mean, my entire family is medical professionals to some degree. Uh-huh. And I walked in and I'm like, literally the entire family, all these cousins I've not seen since they were, you know, half my height are all towering over me. I was the shortest person in the room. And mm-hmm. I'm the oldest grandchild. But I was the shortest. So, and all of them were taller than me by at least half a foot to a full foot. So I'm looking up at like all my cousins but one of them is doing engineering. Another got into Harvard for basketball and is probably doing something with engineering. Like I'm so glad my parents let me take the path I did, because I would not have fared well in that environment. But it was mm-hmm. the weirdest thing, because they're all like, so you're doing art now? You do that for a living? You make money doing that? You live doing that? I'm like, yeah.
So talking about that, you know, so you switch, you know, your family being mostly medical professionals who has somewhat of an artistic streak, you know, and you having different artistic streaks as far as, you know, you've got the illustration, the lettering, the background in graphic design, plus, you know, opera's artistic. It's just vocal, not drawing. So you switch from at North Florida from opera to graphic design and get into that. And then, you know, when you get out of college, what are you doing then?
Well, when I was in college, you know, it was very much the style of the art that we all did was like that Swiss clean modern. Mm-hmm. And there was that whole track of like, print is dead, go to the web. And so a lot of me was just thinking like, oh, I'm gonna have to go into web design. What am I doing? I hate web design. And I was like, well, I'll freelance on the side and I'll figure stuff out. Mm-hmm. And I got incredibly lucky when I graduated, because I had switched to graphic design because I saw all the people walking around their giant art portfolios and I was jealous. Mm-hmm. A couple years later, I came to regret that because I was carrying it. And I'm like, why is this thing so freaking heavy? Like,
yeah, I think everyone's made that statement at some point.
Yeah, but I was, you know, they all got to draw, like sit around the lake and draw. And I'm like, I want to do that. That looks like fun. You get graded for this? this is a class. So mm-hmm. when I graduated, though, our teachers were really awesome and would help us find internships. And so my final semester of my senior year, I went up to one of the teachers, I think it was Blake Coglianis, and said, "Hey, if you have any leads on internships, I would love to be added to the list." And he said, "Sure." So I get an email. I don't know how much later, but I did get an email one day, and it was to me and one other of my classmates. And he said, "Hey, this is a internship open to you guys. I think you guys would probably do really well at this internship. Go apply." Mm-hmm. And so I immediately sent an email to this place, and got an interview. And is Brunette Garcia Advertising in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And they are, to this day, still like some of my biggest supporters. I love them. They are wonderful. And mm-hmm. they also fueled my love for espresso. They had an automatic espresso machine in the in the agency, in the studio. And they're like, "You can have as much as you like." So I had like 3 a day. And it was good Cuban espresso, too.
Oh, nice.
But I applied it for this internship. I got the interview. I showed up. And it was Ariane hired me on the spot. She looked at my work. She said, "You know what? I think you're going to be a good fit." Hired me on the spot. And I was there for 6 months. And I started before my classes finished up. I actually started prior to graduation, the week after Thanksgiving. So in the middle of like finishing portfolio stuff, I just started the internship, and then I graduated and I continued doing it, and only took a week off to go on a graduation trip, and then jump back in. And I was there through, I think it was either May or June. Mm-hmm. And then they kept me on for freelance. They didn't have enough work coming in at the time to hire me full time, but they really were so incredibly encouraging. I got to work on so many real life projects, and they recognized that I would be an illustrator before I recognized I would be an illustrator.
That's cool.
Yeah, because the first project I got to do for them was a full-on illustration, and a lot of the work, for the most part, that they gave me was illustration based, which was amazing. So they kind of really fueled my passion, and I just started getting into hand lettering at that point, and I'd done a little bit of it in college, but mm-hmm. not a lot. It's kind of funny because I'll look at my stuff and I'm like, "Wait, I did more hand lettering than I thought." Mm-hmm. And so they had me letter this poster for this event called The World of Foot that was being held by Players by the Sea. And I just remember the creative director at the time, Jefferson, came up to me and he's like, "So I've got a fun project for you." And I was like, "Bring it." And he goes, "I want you to letter all these titles, and then we're going to fit them around this man sitting in a chair, and we're going to have you draw the world around him." And I was like, "Done. I'm so excited." I think it was 3 or 4 days straight, just 9 to 5. I was looking at different fonts, and, you know, I hadn't really delved too far into looking at like vintage resources and stuff. I was just kind of looking at like at my fonts and coming up with ones on my own. And
sure.
Ultimately it ended up getting into the Comm Arts Type Annual later that year.
Oh, cool.
Which really helped launch where I'm at now, because mm-hmm. I just got a project in on Friday, and the only piece they referenced was that poster. And it's easily been about almost 6 years since I did that piece.
Which is funny, yeah, because you've done a lot of pretty notable work since then. So
yeah,
to go back and reference that piece,
yeah,
that shows a kind of longevity in your style, I think, too.
Yeah, it's fun for me, and it's fun because I have the poster hung up right above my desk, so it's mm-hmm. you know, a constant reminder of where I was and where I came from, just so that I don't ever, you know, forget my roots. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I got lucky that my parents were very supportive of me wanting to take this, you know, dive into art, because they didn't know what I could do, and my mom was like, "Well, if you want to do art, sure." And then she saw that graphic design was actually a feasible, you know, job.
Career path for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, something legitimate. She's like, "All right, that works. You can do that."
Yeah. So you end your internship there, and then I know you went and got a job in-house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to talk a little bit about that and how that kind of transitioned into what you do now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, when I graduated, the job market was terrible.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. It was in 2010. So, I mean, I think the market had crashed like 2 years earlier, and all of us were worried because it was so hard to get a job, especially coming out of school with no experience. And so I had applied at this one place downtown in Jacksonville for a web design position. Thank God I did not get that. But it was, I mean, it was full web design. It was an awkward day too, because there were a lot of fires going on in Florida at that point. It was a very, very hot summer. So like my walk from the car to the building, I ended up smelling like fire smoke.
Like campfire.
Yeah. And I just, I mean, I walked in, I'm like, I'm sorry, I smell like a campfire. He goes, it's fine. Because I mean, it was awful that summer. But ultimately, I didn't get that job. I applied for a few others. And then I saw that this place called Body Central was hiring. Mm-hmm. And Body Central, it doesn't exist anymore. At the time, though, it was a clothing apparel store for young women, the ages of like preteen to early 20s. That was sort of their demographic they were going for. And
so like the limited two?
Yeah, but more on the mature look or the club. They kind of went to both. Like when I was really young, I remember the store in the mall, and it was pretty much strictly club attire. Mm-hmm. And so when I applied for the...
Just how you want your preteen to dress.
Exactly. Well, it was the 90s at that time.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it was... but when I applied there, I ended up getting an interview. And it just so happened, I actually went to school with the two girls that worked there as the designer. So I had a little bit of a, not an in, but they already knew my work. Mm-hmm. And so they were able to back me up. And I remember I went in for, I think, a grand total of 4 interviews there.
Okay.
And I mean, it was like, I went in for one interview, and then like, it was 2 weeks later. I mean, it took a month to get this job. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, the main director of the design department, she's like, well, you know, you don't really have the experience we're looking for, you know, and I'm not sure if it's, you know, something that you'd be quite ready for. And I finally looked her in the eye and said, you know, I realize, well, I don't have a lot of experience. And I said, I've worked in the field for 6 months at an internship, and I have quite a few accolades under my belt. I said, I've managed to get a few awards as a student. And I said, I can do this. And it was kind of like that scene in The Devil Wears Prada where she's like, I know I don't know what I'm doing, but I will work hard and I will do it. And they hire her. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I did kind of know what I was doing. But ultimately, I ended up doing store signage there.
Okay.
Which when I started was, for some reason, it was done in Photoshop. And every sign was a separate layer group. And so one of the things I did was I transitioned that over to InDesign because it, one, kept my computer from crashing. and two, was a lot easier because my boss would come in at, you know, the golden hour before we have to send them off to go print, and she'd want to change the typeface.
Of course.
So when it was in Photoshop, it was a pain in the butt to do. But when it was in InDesign, I'd already, you know, created the textiles. Mm-hmm. So I already had them. All I had to do was switch it in that one little thing, and it would apply it to the entire document. I just have to go in and kind of fix little kerning things here and there.
Sure.
So that ended up being just like, I did that for a year. And, got to go on photo shoots. This was really cool. There were a lot of very early 4 a.m. mornings where we were driving to St. Augustine. And the cool thing is we did get to meet some really, really awesome models. One of ours was Nina Agdal, and she's now doing huge things. Another was Taylor Hill, who's now one of the Victoria's Secret Angels. So we had quite a few models actually go on to do really huge things, and it was fun to, you know, kind of realize like, oh, I've met her before. She's cool. She's super sweet. But we'd also get to go to these really, like, really pretty locations to photograph these, you know, these campaigns. And a lot of it was like making it look like we weren't in Florida. So we went to this one, and we had this fake snow that we had to toss all over. And it was really fun to make because you'd pour water and you'd swish it up and you'd just get more and more and more snow.
Nice.
And so we had to, like, you know, sprinkle it all around so that when the photo was taken, it looked like it was winter. And it actually worked. And then we had another shoot at one point where it was just done in the studio for some of the, just like, we didn't need anything but like confetti and things. And my old ice skates actually made it into one of the campaign photos because they had a pair at the studio that they were going to have our model use. And they were just old and rusty and just gross looking. And I went up to my boss.
Sat out in the garage for way too long. That type.
Yeah, the kind where like you literally could bend the entire boot over, like cheapies. And I went to my boss and I said, I have my skates in the car. They're white. They look clean. And they've got hot pink laces. Can I substitute those in for these? Because those are a disaster. And she goes, oh yeah, of course, by all means. So I go grab them, and our model was Brazilian. She didn't speak English. And so we had to like somehow tell her like, don't touch the blades. The blades are sharp. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other ones were so dull that you could do, you know, run your hand down them and not get cut. So yeah, we had to, you know, reiterate to her, like, don't touch the blades. You will get cut. But it was fun because it ended up showing up in a campaign in the store. And I was like, oh, look, there's muskates.
Cool.
But yeah, so I did that for about a year. We were getting ready for the Christmas campaign. And I got an email through Dribbble from a guy in Orlando asking if I'd be interested in applying to be an art director at an agency down in Orlando. Mm-hmm. And I wrote back. I said, I would love to. So we scheduled the interview. I went down the day after Labor Day and drove all the way down to Orlando, interviewed, drove all the way back up to Jacksonville, and then went straight to work. And I didn't tell my boss at the time because obviously I didn't want to, you know, jinx myself.
Yeah, generally not a good idea to tell your boss that you're looking for another job.
Yeah, and at the time I really wasn't looking. It was just an opportunity that happened to present itself because right. I was waiting until I had passed a year before I was going to start looking. And ultimately ended up at, it was about a year into my job that I got this email. And so about 3 weeks later, I get a message at work in my email, and I check my phone and I have a voicemail, and it's one of the guys that runs the place. And he said, we'd really like to hire you. Please give us a call back at your earliest convenience. Well, I couldn't call him at work. So I had to wait till I got in my car after work, and I sat there and I called him back, and he said, you know, we had to do some convincing, but we would love to offer you the job. And
that's never a good opening sentence.
Yeah. And I was so naive, and I was so just eager to get out of where I was at the time, because it wasn't that I wasn't happy. It was just not where I wanted to see myself a year from then.
Sure.
You know, I wanted to continue going, pushing forward. And so I took the job, and they wanted me to start 2 weeks later. I worked two jobs up in Jacksonville. I worked at Body Central, but I also worked at the ice rink. And so I had to quit two jobs. And so I said, the guy said, you know, I would really appreciate it if I could get 3 weeks, only because I have to quit two jobs and I have to move. And I said, and I said, out of respect for my employers, since this is sort of sudden for them, I would really love to give them my full 2 weeks. And he reluctantly agreed. And, so in 3 weeks, I had moved down here, and I thank God my parents, my mom at the time, she said, focus on everything you need to finish up there, and I will find you somewhere down here. And she texted me at work one day. She goes, I found an apartment. It's across the street from the ice rink. How's that work? I was like, that works fine. So I went down the next day with her. We walked around, we checked it out, and I just signed the lease that day, and that's where I still am. But it was, I think the hardest part of moving away was leaving my best friend. We had lived together for about 6 years at that point, and we didn't quite realize how much it was going to suck to leave each other.
Sure.
But it just so happened that a friend of mine, a mutual friend for both of us, but a friend of mine needed to move back to Jacksonville for a job and needed an apartment right when I needed to move away and fill my spot. And so we were...
That's a nice, helpful switch out for you.
Oh my gosh. It was so... I mean, it was weird. It's like everything fell into place, which was the weirdest thing. So despite the initial, like, we had some reservations, you know, things fell into place so easily that it was the easiest transition.
Right.
And the first week while I was at work, my mom actually put the whole apartment together. She's like, no, focus on work. I'm going to decorate and have fun. And so I'd come home and she's like, so today I put away the dishes and they're going to be here and here and here. And look, I hung curtains. And so she was very proud of herself. But she, by the time the end of the week came, she sat on my couch. She's like, I don't want to leave. I want to live here. And so every time she comes to visit, she walks in, she goes, I still love your little apartment. but then, you know, so I worked at this agency in Orlando for 3.5 months. And everything before Christmas seemed fine, though the jobs that they told me they were hiring me to do, I wasn't working on. They had an intern when I started, and then they hired him to share my position like 2 weeks later. And I really think that was a huge red flag. And I did, you know, I was kind of surprised, and I wish they'd pulled me aside and just said, you know, hey, just want to let you know, you don't have to worry, but we want to hire him and you guys are going to share a position.
Which is fine, but...
Yeah, you know, but it would have been nice to know that it was coming versus finding out with everybody else at the morning meeting. And they didn't say what his position was. They just said, we hired him. So I messaged him. I'm like, congratulations. What position did you get hired for? He goes, oh, well, I'm also doing your position. I was like, oh. But I was like, you know what? That's fine. People share positions all the time. This will be fine. Mm-hmm. They just have a lot of work that needs to get done. And ultimately, you know, Christmas comes around. We have the Christmas party. Things are great. I get a lot of, you know, we're so happy to have you part of the team, yada, yada, from the higher ups and the other creative directors and stuff. And I thought, cool, I'm okay then. So I come back from Christmas because we all got, I think, a week and a half off. Mm-hmm. I come back and the vibe has completely changed.
Oh, no.
I couldn't figure out what it was, but just something didn't feel right. And I spent literally all of January I could feel something was about to happen. And in my heart, I knew firing was probably what it would be if it was going to be bad. And on February 1st of 2013, they pulled me into the office. It was a Friday afternoon, 4 o'clock. And they said, we're letting you go effective immediately. No explanation, no reasoning, nothing. And they read me, I guess, walking papers or something. I don't know. I had an attorney look them over and he goes, these are a mess. Ultimately, I did not sign them because they were a gag order for I don't even know what, you know, I don't know if they said something around me that I wasn't supposed to hear and they were worried I was going to say something or I don't know what happened. But, you know, and at this point, I don't need to know because knowing isn't going to help me.
Yeah, it was probably nothing more than just we're just bad at doing business thing.
Yeah. You know, and it was, I think the hardest thing was I found out after I was gone, I got in my car. And I turned my phone on. I put on my phone to go call my mom and wail at her. And I have an email and it said, it was to the entire company, including me. And it said, Sean is no longer a part of the company effective immediately. And I'm sitting in my car reading this. And I'd already, you know, originally the guy wasn't going to let me go to my desk to collect my things. He was going to have the HR lady go collect my stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had cried in the office, but I pulled myself together. I stood up and, you know, this man's like 6-something feet tall. And I put my hand out and I said, I want to thank you for this opportunity. And I shook his hand and he looked startled because I'm pretty sure people don't normally do that.
Yeah.
And then he said, okay, so-and-so is going to go collect your things. And I said, no, I said, I really would like to collect my stuff. And he goes, no, she'll get it. Just let her know what stuff you have. And I said, you don't get it. I said, I brought my own books from home. I have my own tablet. I have my purse over there. I have a flat iron because it rains in Florida and I'd get to work and I'd have like curly hair. So I'd run in the bathroom real quick and straighten myself out. I'm like, I have things in there that I need to make sure that I get it all. I said, I need to. And he goes, so he finally relented. I'm pretty sure he expected me to run out and go, what the, and have a meltdown in front of people. But I walked to my desk. HR lady walked with me. She collected my key. I shut down the computer. I collected my stuff in 2 boxes. I got all but one book. My friend that was still there managed to grab that for me a week later. Mm-hmm. And I collected my stuff and I got my car, saw that email. And to this day, my biggest regret is not doing a reply all and saying, yes, I'm aware. I wish I had done that, but I wasn't in the right state of mind to think that at the time. And so my parents hauled ass from Daytona in, you know, rush hour I-4 traffic. And what would take me, the agency is 15 minutes from where I live. It took me 45 minutes to get home. The traffic was so bad. And so I got home and about 10 minutes later, my parents walked through the door. My dad went and fixed a drink. And, you know, they sat down on the couch with me and they're like, so what? Let's figure this out. And I'd already been sitting on my iPad, like looking up jobs. And I told my mom, I was like, well, I'm looking for other jobs. And, you know, in the meantime, I think I'm just going to, you know, just freelance a little bit just to make ends meet until I get something. And she goes, and she looks at me, she goes, you didn't come down here to job hunt. You came down here for a job, which clearly, unfortunately, did not work out. Mm-hmm. She goes, you've wanted to try freelancing forever. Why don't you just try it? She goes, just jump in head first. We'll help you with groceries so you don't have to worry about eating. And she goes, if in 6 months it doesn't work, then you job hunt. She goes, and, you know, on the gap, you'll have a little gap on your resume. You explain it off as saying, I tried freelancing for 6 months. It didn't work out. Here I am.
Sure. So at that point, you this is kind of when you make the transition.
Yeah. Well, and there was 5 days where my mom goes, but first you're coming home and you're taking a vacation for 5 days.
Yeah, that's always, you got to have, I mean, I hate to say you got to have at least a day to feel sorry for yourself, but to just decompress and absorb everything before you can hit the streets again. So you've made the transition into freelancing, and I know you work with an agent now. How does that work out? I'm assuming you had to freelance for a while before you could even get an agent.
Well, I had done a little bit of freelance here and there from my internship to that point. Mm-hmm. And I'd listened to a lot of podcasts and such. And I was very much, I loved Jessica Hitch's work, and I loved any of the podcasts she'd speak on because she's very frank about everything. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned having an agent and how it helped her as far as getting work and as far as just, you know, she was able to focus on what she likes to do without having to necessarily focus on the business aspect as much. Mm-hmm. And I thought that might be a good idea. And so prior actually to moving down here, I had started to contact agents just to see if I could get some extra freelance work. And I had applied at a couple, and one wrote back to me and they said, "We really like your work. We're going to present it and I'll let you know what happens." And ultimately I followed up with her about a month later, and she says, "Unfortunately, you know, the work's not ready yet. However, please feel free to send me more. You know, I would love to see more as the months go on, and I'll keep presenting your work because I really like it." And I said, "Wonderful. Thank you so much." And so when I decided to start the freelancing gig, I'd been home for 5 days and I was just chomping at the bit at that point to get started. Mm-hmm. And so I went back that Wednesday. It's about 5 days later. I managed to have just like a quick brochure project from my old rank boss, which just gave me something to do. 2 days later, I got a call from an agency up in New York City asking me to do a cover for their annual report.
Sure.
So immediately, I didn't reach out to them. Somehow they found my work, and it was just kind of everything was lining up in the universe how it needed to, and things started coming. And in the meantime, I emailed the agent that I had spoken to a couple months earlier, and I said, "Hey, I've decided to go full-time freelance. May I still send you work?" And she wrote back and said, "Of course, please send me things as you finish them." And so it was about 4 months I was continually sending her things. Somehow these jobs just sort of kept finding me. Mm-hmm. And then in May, I got to do this. No, it was April, because it was a cover for a May issue. So in April, I got to do this cover for Jacksonville Magazine that I got because the creative director is currently now married to the son of the owners of Brunei Garcia. So it worked out. You know, I managed to actually have a lot of freelance through them because they'd refer people to me, which was wonderful.
Sure.
And so I did this cover. She had me do chalk type around a salmon taco or a tuna taco. It was a fish taco of some kind. And when I finished, I sent it off to the agent, and she wrote back and she goes, "That's it. That's what we're looking for. Your contract is coming next week."
That's awesome.
But I didn't send it to her until it was live on the stand. So it was like the end of May. And so that's when in June I read over the contract. Took me a couple weeks to make the decision and such, but I signed up with Illustration LTD, and I've been with them since then. So we're going on, I think it's been almost 3 years at this point.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know one of the things that you do that I find really impressive is the side projects you do. And I know of at least five that you've done. How do you find the motivation to do that? Because I mean, that for me, that's a big challenge is, you know, I want to do stuff, but then life gets in the way and procrastination takes over. And
yeah. Well,
all that.
The funny thing is, I think a lot of it is when I first started, because I didn't have work coming in, I had to make up projects just to pad my portfolio a bit. And so I used to just make like very positive quotes and things. And eventually that transitioned into me needing to do something daily to keep myself going. So the very first daily project I'd started, which I don't think ended up being daily because I'm really not good at sticking to a daily thing. And I'll come back to that because I decided to do that this year. But it was this thing called 3-word stories. And at the time, anything more than about 5 words really intimidated me as far as content and drawing out the content. And nowadays, it's actually really hard for me to do anything less than 5 words. So it's an interesting switch that happened. But at the time, I figured, well, 3 words, simple, you know, it would just be something like, "Don't stop now," or "But first coffee," you know, things like that, where it was just very simple, very quick sentences that essentially could also tell a story. And it could just be very simple, very quick. And so I did that for a few months. And then I just got uninterested in it. You know, I had a couple fun points where, like, I had a couple people submit to it, which was fun. It was just this ongoing thing for a little while. And then eventually, late last year, I finally decided, you know what? I'm going to cancel the domain. I have not updated this in over a year. It's time to kill it. And so I killed that. And then two years ago, it was right when, like, every article had clickbait. Mm-hmm. And it was just constant, you know. And I thought, how funny would it be to just to letter and illustrate these things. And so I sat down and I kind of started brainstorming and came up with the clickbait project and ended up just being the silliest, you know, thing where because these headlines would sound so ridiculous. My one rule was the headline couldn't have one of those, you'll never believe what happened next. Mm-hmm. Because then it would just be every one of them would look ridiculous. So sure. There were ones where it was like stage 6 clinger gets stuck climbing down chimney. And it was ones that it had to make me laugh and it had to be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And there was one I saw actually recently because I haven't updated it in about 6 months now, but it's a little over a year old at this point. And it is really a fun project for me to do. It's just right now, people have now stopped doing such clickbaity headlines that I'm not getting that. I'm not getting the content as much anymore. And I was going just like, if I saw it on Facebook, it was easy because I could just grab it then.
I think people have just gotten better at writing clickbaity headlines so they don't feel as clickbaity.
Yeah. Like I had one.
Because I've fallen for a couple recently.
Yeah. I'll have to look closer because I'm not reading things on Facebook as much as I used to. But I was scrolling over the Christmas break and I found one that I was like, okay, I think I'm going to have to make this one happen. It's Grandma trapped in bathroom for 4 days, knits a scarf.
There's so many disturbing things about that.
I know. And I was like, all right, I could probably get away with doing this one. So I may in the next.
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
Yeah. So I may in the next like 2 weeks just take some time to do that. But with the clickbait one, I made it so it would just kind of be whenever I could get around to doing it rather than putting a self. You know, ideally, I wanted to do one a week, which for a while that was doable because I really didn't have a ton of work yet. And the headlines were everywhere. And then I got busy and so I just kind of fit it in whenever I could. And at this point, it's been 6 months. So I'm thinking I really ought to do another just to keep it going because I don't want to kill the project yet.
Right. I think that's one that, you know, you can keep going and just check in on every once in a while and still have fun with it. It doesn't have to be a end goal of daily project and just be a fun one for whenever you feel like it or see something.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's talk about the one that you got coming up, your new daily project.
Well, I just started this on the 1st because my mom and I were sitting down and talking. She's like, why don't you do a daily project? And I said, well, I have trouble sticking to it. And she goes, just do it. And so we sat there and we brainstormed some ideas because she's like, well, what do you like? And then she goes, well, you like cocktails and booze. And I was like, yeah, I do. And so I sat down and I just started brainstorming one day and I started writing down all these different idea titles because I knew I wanted to do hand-lettered cocktail titles or cocktail names. Mm-hmm. And so I sat down, I just kept like writing all these, you know, 365 cocktails and, you know, all this. And all of a sudden I landed on 5 o'clock somewhere. And I thought, that works. Because then I'm not stuck doing it in the morning. I can do it at night. And then technically it's still 5 o'clock somewhere.
This is true.
Yeah. So I actually ended up, because I was, you know, I was home for 2 weeks. I walked outside and my mom's taking the dog out. And I go, so I think I came up with the name. She goes, what? And I said, 5 o'clock somewhere. She goes, I love it. She's like, that's perfect. So I created the little logo header and started doing a couple. But what I ended up doing, rather than giving myself daily, it's Monday to Friday. So that way I'm not stuck to do, you know, I'm not trying to do them on a weekend. Right. Because weekends for me, like I like to sleep
in. You got to have time off.
Yeah. You know, and it's one of those things like I could, in theory, I could probably work ahead on a couple. That way, if I go on vacation, I actually have some queued up ready to go, which, you know, it defeats the purpose of the daily aspect of it. But what I'm doing is I'm using it to explore techniques and explore different styles and allow myself to really delve into the vintage typography that I love so much, because a lot of times with the client work I get, they reference things I've already done and it doesn't really require much research on my end.
They want a specific style that you've done.
Yeah. And so I don't really get to branch out further. I'm just, you know, repeating my biggest hits. So.
Well, let's talk about that for a second real quick. Speaking of style. You know, because I mean, I think you do have a very distinctive style, but I've seen that style evolving. Mm-hmm. Now, at this point, do you consider yourself a hand lettering artist or do you consider yourself an illustrator?
That's a tough call. I think I actually feel more comfortable in the illustrator side of it. You know,
That's where I think you fit more.
Yeah, because I, you know, I illustrate letters. I think if I were more on the hand lettering side, I'd be a lot more technical with things. You know, I'm still learning a lot of the type lingo. And the class I took in college, my professor had a very, very thick accent. And I spent half a semester wondering what a canon was. And it turns out it was kerning. He just had such a thick accent that he'd say,
"Wow,
you need to make sure that you increase the canon." And I'm like, "What's a canon? What's the canon?" So I really
it's
didn't.
Like, it's like MailChimp on cereal.
Yeah, a lot like MailChimp. Yeah. And so I was just. A lot of the things I am still learning, I'm not very good at when I teach a workshop, I'm more like, go with what you feel. Don't worry about the technical aspect. Whereas, you know, other artists are like, this is the bowl and this is the this and this is the that and this is the apex and blah, blah. And I'm like, go with what you feel. You know, I'm the Bob Ross of the hand lettering world.
And, you know, and speaking of, you know, teaching workshops, I know that lately you've taught a couple workshops. You did one with Mama's Sauce, I think, and you did a Skillshare class. But she also did a book.
Yes. Well, and to be fair, the Skillshare class.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. The Skillshare class hasn't happened yet. I keep putting it off. I got very overwhelmed and I'm not good at recording myself. So I need to figure out a different situation for that. So yeah, Skillshare hasn't happened yet. But with the book, it was weird because it came, randomly got an email from Walter Foster and they're like, we're putting together a book on lettering. Do you want to contribute? And I was like, heck yeah, I want to contribute. And they had me cover chalk lettering. And so I had to do a lot of photography for that. But all the chalk work I did for the book was done digitally because I didn't want to have to photograph the work. But it's a fun book. You know, it's a lot of like step-by-step stuff. And it's interesting because about 75% of the book is more calligraphy than it is lettering. And then you have mine, which is actually lettering. So it's an interesting transition.
And what's the name of the book again?
Creative Lettering and Beyond.
So, yeah, I like that transition. I've somewhere around here we have a copy of it, which I keep meaning to actually dive into versus the just glancing through that I keep doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of cool that, you know, especially in such a relatively short time from going out on your own, you know, you've had a lot of work that's been pretty high profile and I mean, people may not know that it's you because Lord knows in this profession, unless you're in the profession, nobody knows who anybody is. But you've done like the International Delight coffee packaging. But you've done stuff like that. And then, you know, 3 years later, you're doing a book, too. And
yeah,
I think that's pretty cool and shows how quickly your style has evolved.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I think there's one thing to be said for natural talent, which I mean, you definitely have. But you also work your butt off at it with these side projects, whether it's intentionally working your butt off or just having fun. Mm-hmm. It's still that you're constantly doing something. So things constantly evolve.
Right.
Was that with that stuff? Was that a goal in it or was it just to have fun? And it's just kind of morphed into that.
A lot of the projects were just in order to give myself something to do when I had no work so that I wasn't sitting around and twiddling my thumbs all day. But like the latest project I'm doing, the 5 o'clock somewhere is more, that one is more pushing myself on a more technical side. You know, it's fun for me because I enjoy the fun cocktail names, but it's done with the intention that I want to see myself improve and push my style farther versus clickbait, which was just, I need something to do. And this sounds fun, you know, or like I have the We Need to Talk project. And that's literally done because
that's still one of my favorites.
Yeah, that was done without any goal in mind other than to poke fun at situations that everyone deals with. Mm-hmm. And it was really funny because like apartment therapy picked it up, which I thought was really amazing. And it was really only like a couple weeks after I started it that it popped up on apartment therapy. But reading all the comments, a lot of people don't have a sense of humor. So it was a lot of like, so it was a lot of people.
That's just called the internet.
Yeah. Well, it was a lot of people that were like, well, it's real childish to put a note like this on someone's door. Why don't you just talk to them? I'm like, do you know the age we're in? Do you know how many people have guns? Pretty sure.
And it's not like you're actually putting these on people's doors. Yeah. It's just.
I did put one on someone's door. The raccoon one. That did go on my neighbor's door because they had trash sitting in there in the middle of the day. And the raccoon's in my hallway. I'm on the third floor. The raccoon is out there sifting through the trash and lifting the lid. And I keep hearing this thump, thump, thump every time he opens and lets it close. And I walked out and this raccoon looks back at me and I go, the heck? And so I look at him, I go, shoo. Yeah, I stomp and he looks at me, he goes, what? You know, like the raccoon just looked at me like, seriously, I ain't leaving. There's food here. So I'm.
See, this is where I wish people could see what you just did, where you bowed up.
I can demonstrate it with some time. Again, the raccoon literally, he stood on his hind legs and looked at me and just like, challenged me. Just try, you know? And So I went in my apartment. I tweeted like, dear neighbor.
So you backed down from the raccoon.
I backed down from the raccoon and I kept Teddy inside because the last thing I wanted was my dog going after the raccoon and getting cut or something. And So I go in my apartment and I was just angry. And I'm like, so I called the front office. And so later that night, it happens again. And I just hear it happening and happening and happening. Like, the trash had already come. And it was a weird week because the trash guys were coming at, like, 7 when they weren't supposed to show up till, like, 8:30. And So people were putting their trash out when they were supposed to, but the trash guys already came. And so I heard it again. And I tweeted about it. And I go, dear neighbor, you have a dirty can. Love raccoons. Something like that. And Lenny wrote back to me. And he goes, if you don't letter this, life is not worth living. Mm-hmm. And that started the project. Because the next day I heard it again and the raccoon was going crazy. So I lettered it. I printed it out. I walked outside. I snapped a photo of the raccoon, attached it. And then when the raccoon walked away, I walked up to the door and I stuck it onto the piece of tape with the raccoon. And I put a little speech bubble next to the raccoon that said, hey there. And I walked away. And then it was gone like an hour later.
And the trash was still there.
Trash was still there. But I posted the photo up on Facebook and I got a bunch of people that said, oh my God, this needs to be real. I need one for parking. I need one for kids. I need one for this. And I was like, I think I've got something here. And ended up talking it out with one of my friends from Brunette Garcia, who is and she and I just kind of went back and forth with like ideas for names. And we came up with We Need to Talk. And she goes, that's a perfect passive aggressive opener. And so it worked out. And so I did a couple before I launched the whole thing. And then I added to it. And I ended up getting a bunch of inquiries in my Tumblr inbox of like one person. Some of them are really, really inappropriate that I get. But one was like, dear neighbor child, next time you decide to have sex on your patio, make sure that I'm not home or I'm telling your dad.
Oh, dear Lord. That brings me back to living in apartments.
Yeah. And
I had a horrible neighbor who there was just a revolving door of the people coming in.
Oh God.
And I'm pretty sure he was equal opportunity too.
Yeah.
It was just 2 a.m. to be woken up to that. Just is not what you want to hear.
No. I know. I'm dealing with some neighbors that don't parent their kids very well. Yeah. And so I'm very close to making one and sticking it on their doors that says, dear neighbor, the hallway is not a storage unit for your scooters. Please put them away or something. Cause I've tripped over, they've left their scooters on the base of the stairs and I've had to step over it. I've tripped on them before. I've finally hit the breaking point where the next time I see it, I'm kicking it. And I don't care if they're there and seeing it, I'm just going to kick it. Cause there's no reason that there should be obstacles on my staircase. Or like yesterday, there were neighbor kids were outside with their basketball and they kept throwing it at the stairwell. And so I kept hearing, I'm like.
Every stair on the way that, yeah, I can imagine.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I sound like I'm like this crotchety old lady. I'm very much like I enjoy my quiet. And when I moved in here, there were no kids. It's only in the last like 6 or 7 months that these kids are showing up and they're using the parking lot as like this big playground. And, you know, there's one that he, for some reason, doesn't look before he runs in the road. So I've almost ran into him multiple times with my car and he's almost been hit by other people in cars. And his mom's of the like, well, he'll learn when he gets hit. And I'm like, I don't want to be that person that hits your child. I really don't.
That's not the way to learn.
Yeah, because don't get me wrong. I love kids. I taught toddlers. I taught them how to ice skate. I love kids. They're not my own, so I don't have to deal with them. Yeah. But it's a lot of the times it's just the parents. And I'm like, come on. This shouldn't be an issue still.
So,
but.
Well, so you said something back there that I want to touch on. You said, you know, you love your quiet. And I know a lot of designers and artistic types consider themselves to be introverted. And I know I've talked to you about this before. You kind of feel that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, having met you and, you know, talking with you now, I don't know that I'd see you so much as an introvert. I mean, I know you need your time to recharge and a lot of people do that. But you can be very outgoing and all that. Do you think it's more introversion or social anxiety?
It may be both. I joke.
A little bit of both.
Yeah, I joke that I'm an introverted extrovert. Mm-hmm. You know, because I can be extroverted, but it takes a lot to get me to get out somewhere. Because there's a lot of nights that I'm like, I don't want to go downtown. I just want to sit in here and draw. Like, I don't want to be social. And even at Creative South last year, it was really interesting because the first night when we had the big block party on the bridge, I was hanging out with my friend Megan Ryan, Eliza Sotieros, Molly Jakes, and myself. And we're all waiting in line to get drinks. And this girl behind us strikes up conversation about how she's so excited for the conference. And she can't wait to talk to the speakers one-on-one. And she can't wait to see all the speaker talks, not even realizing that Molly and I were both speakers. And
sadly, I know who that was because I was that was. So she's in AIGA with me and I was right next to y'all when she was talking about it. And I didn't realize that you I was like halfway paying attention because I was talking to her.
Yeah.
And then I look over and I'm like, oh, there's Shauna.
Yeah.
So I just kind of let it go just to watch.
Yeah. Well, and part of me, too, I didn't want to be like, well, I'm a speaker. You know, it was funny watching the transition happen because as soon as she realized that we were speakers, her demeanor changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it was a really interesting change. And I'm like, I saw that, you know, very, very nice girl. It was just really funny watching how her attitude changed. And, but it was funny because both Molly and I, you know, Molly is, you know, about, I think she's a little shorter than I am. She's this tiny little thing. And, you know, she doesn't look a lot like her photos. Her photos, she looks like this really tall person.
Yeah.
And in person, she looks nothing like that. And I think to an extent, at times, I don't think either people have seen photos of me because I don't post a ton on my Instagram of myself. Mm-mm. And, you know, or what they've seen is, you know, Teddy. So a lot of people didn't recognize me until...
He is very photogenic.
He is one photogenic little pup. I love him. but I don't think a lot of people even realized who I was until after I got off stage. So it was fun that first night kind of enjoying in the last moments of... Not invisibility, just kind of like incognito a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, a little bit of anonymity for that night. I got to just kind of enjoy and be around people. And, you know, those that recognized me were ones that I know from UCF. There were a bunch of students that came up and ran up and they like fangirled, which is the weirdest thing. I looked at them like, you guys know me. You've met me. Like, you don't have to fangirl. But they're like, we love your work so much. We can't believe you're here. And we're so excited to be. I'm like, and then I had my mentee. I did the AIGA mentorship program last year. Mm-hmm. And I was hanging out with my mentee. And they one girl looks at her. And she goes, I'm so jealous that she's your mentor. So it was really funny because then the next, you know, several days were just constant like people. And right. Which was very, very humbling. It was really exciting. But within, you know, by the last day,
it can be draining too.
I was so drained. I ended up grabbing Megan, Molly, and Eliza, and I'm like, let's go get lunch at the hotel. And we went to the, I think it was like, what, TGI Fridays or something there? I don't know.
Yeah.
One of those. And
some sort of knockoff of it, yeah.
Yeah, so we sat outside, you know, but there was really, everyone was over at the conference. So we got, you know, some quiet, like an hour and a half long lunch where we just got to decompress and just enjoy each other's company without the barrage of people around. And then, of course, I got home and I'm like, I need to just sleep for a week. But like even my best friend makes fun of me because when we lived together in college and after college, we'd go out to a party one night and it would take her being like, let's go. It'll be fun. Just come. And I'm like, all right, fine. Mm-hmm. I'll go. And I'd come home and I'm like, it would take me 3 days to recoup. And so she makes fun of me for that. She's like, so you're going to go out and it's going to take you 3 days. You'll be better by Monday. But I, you know, once... Yeah, I can talk to people, no problem. I can have conversations. A lot of that I have to thank my sorority for because we were put in situations where we had to. Like, you can't be an outward introvert in that group because you have to recruit girls. You have to talk to these girls and get them talking. Right. And so it was a lot of, like, we did a lot of practice scenarios with each other. And we would have to, which was nice because we already knew each other. So it was just a lot of learning more about each other and having to force each other to talk. Mm-hmm. So I do have, I have to thank that a lot because.
You have social skills.
I have social skills. Yeah, because in high school I was like, you know, I was very quiet, you know, kind of kept to myself. I had my group of friends and that was it. And, you know, now I can go out and I can talk to people and I can have conversations like this and conversations at Creative South and be around people. But a lot of it too is I have that time to decompress and come back down from the social high because I do get. Mm-hmm. Very exhausted very quickly when I'm around a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's just a lot of energy and it's a lot of emotions.
It's overwhelming. And, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even at the Osborne Light Festival last week, it's becoming more apparent the older I get the more that I have some anxiety in big crowds. Mm-hmm. And
I have the same issue.
Yeah. And if I'm prepared for it, I can usually be okay, but only for, you know, short spurts. And of course, it was the last weekend of Osborne Lights. So mm-hmm. everybody and their mother was there. And we're walking through, and of course, you know, all the lights weren't helping. You know, it's just a lot of stimulation all at once, and you know, a lot of music, a lot of people bumping into you and shoving you. And we finally found an area where we could kind of stand off to the side, but I had been silent for like 10 minutes. And my mom goes, "Are you okay?" I said, "I'm fine." I said, "I'm overwhelmed." I said, I believe me, I think this is beautiful. I'm enjoying what I'm seeing. I'm just overwhelmed by the crowd. And mm-hmm. ultimately, like, because my sister used to be the one that was like that in crowds. And so I had to fake it for years that I was fine. And now that she's gotten that under control, I'm able to kind of just be like, no, this is how I've always been. I've just hidden it for a long time. And yeah. I just don't have the energy to hide it anymore. And of course, we're walking through the crowds. My mom goes, "You know, you should look into actually getting diagnosed for this and look into getting Teddy certified as like a therapy dog."
Well, so let's talk about that real quick, because I know, and that's kind of another theme that, you know, a lot of creative people suffer from is, you know, anxiety and depression and all that. I know I personally do. Mm-hmm. What does recharge you other than, you know, just some alone time? What are some other things that you do to recharge yourself just real quickly?
Figure skating, actually.
Figure skating?
Yeah.
Do you find that helps kind of calm you down and bring you back to center?
Yeah, it really does. Because when you go out there, you can't think about anything else. Because the second you do, you're going to fall on your butt. I'm actually sporting this lovely bruise on my elbow.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah, it's about 3 inches long. And actually, and the worst part is I was doing nothing when it happened.
You were just standing there.
And my feet went right out from under me. And when I go skate, I've got a friend who is also a freelancer. And so she and I get together to go skate and practice and work on things. We're both getting ready for a competition in February and scared out of our minds. And we were standing there and chatting. And 1 second I was up, and the next I was on my back, because my feet flipped so far that I didn't land on my butt. I landed on my lower back and my elbow. And she, all of a sudden she looks next to her and she looks down. She goes, "What just happened?" But it was like the second I felt it.
I'm going to go with there may have been another word in there.
I'm sure. Yeah. Well, and of course I'm down on the ground. I'm like cradling my arm. I'm like, "No, dang it. No." And like under my breath, like every expletive that makes you feel better by saying it. And, you know, and I was just like, "This sucks." And ultimately it was one of those, like, as soon as I felt it happen, there was no saving it. Uh-huh. And so but I still love it. I got on the ice still this week, but I took up ice dance recently. And mm-hmm. with that, you can't think of anything else. You have to be focused on the moves and the beats, and you have to stay on the beat. And so all of it's really technical. And mm-hmm. that's where my focus ends up. It's that and not knocking a child over. Those are my.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah. Yeah, I went.
Well, some days you may want to, but
often,
depending on the kid,
often I want to. No, there's I mean,
I have kids and I love my children, but I can definitely understand the frustration.
Yeah. Well,
and other people's kids, I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, I love kids. I think they're adorable. I was on a session the other night where it's called freestyle. It's figure skaters only session. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to run patterns. And a lot of these kids aren't quite high enough level to be on an actual freestyle session. This one's done for like a what's called academy. And if you have the academy membership, mm-hmm. you get to skate that for free. So, sure. I mean, free ice is free ice. And the first night I went, it was great. I got a ton of my pattern stuff in. I got a lot done. And then I went Thursday night. And it was just, I kept having, like, I went down my pattern, and then all of a sudden the same girl cut me off 3 times. And then you couldn't tell who was working on program, because like 3 different girls would be skating to the music, but only one was actually skating to that music. And mm-hmm. I mean, it was a mess. And it was just that at the end of it, I was ready to trip kids, just because I had been cut off so many times by the same ones.
Go from figure skating to a full body check from hockey.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of it too was more like, I don't want to knock them over because I would feel terrible, but I don't want them to knock me over either, because I'm going to go down harder than they will.
Yeah. And possibly land on top of them.
And possibly land on top of them. And that's the last thing I want to do.
Yes. And when you're a full grown adult and they're an 8-year-old.
There's a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there was even one, I'm running my pattern and she did not look where she was going at all. And she just went straight to the music box, like right in front of me. And I'm like, are you kidding me? What is going on here? But I'm advanced enough. I can deviate around them if I have to. Sure. I just don't like to because I need to get that pattern on the, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, the figure skating, though, is, you know, it sounds like it stresses me out. It really doesn't. It's something that is very zen for me. And it's very nice because I can go and I can get any excess energy out and breathe, which is nice. Mm-hmm. So I do that. And then I craft every now and then. I go to Disney. I have an annual pass this year, my sister and I both, so we can bond more.
I'm so jealous of you for that.
Oh, God. I haven't used it enough. I need to go more. Shayla and I, my sister's name is Shayla, so we're Shauna and Shayla. She's coming down next weekend, and we're going to go on Sunday and meet up with her friend Winnie from college and go to, I think we're going to Magic Kingdom. So it'll be really fun. Like, we'll get to go have fun. Because when Food and Wine Fest happened, Shayla and I went 3 times. Because if you're an annual pass holder and you went 3 times and you got your passport stamped, you got a free wine glass.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's a nice one, too. So cool. We went to Food and Wine, I think, 3 or 4 times by the time it was done. And went to Magic Kingdom a couple times just for fun. And we went to Hollywood Studios last weekend, which was fun. So, but we need to go more. It's coordinating hers and my schedule because she lives in Daytona and I'm here. But if we coordinate, she can come the night before, sleep over, and then we leave in the morning, and then she can just crash at my place the next night.
Very cool. Yeah. So, kind of wrapping up, what's on the horizon for Shauna?
What's on the horizon? Well, right now, there's, you know, really no speaking gigs, and, you know, I probably have to apply to a couple or something, but my hope is to have at least one speaking gig this year, maybe do 1 or 2 workshops. I'd love to partner with Mama Sauce again, because the one we did last year ended up having such a high draw that it sold out in 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
And people were very upset about that. And so I may talk to Mama Sauce in the near future about coordinating another one with AIGA Orlando and just seeing if it's something they'd be interested in doing. And then that way we can try and see if we can get the people who didn't get in last time. And that way, because I don't know if you can prevent those that already did it from signing up and maybe, you know, just more just like an honor roll, you know, an honor code thing. Like, if you already did this, please don't sign up again. Let others have an opportunity. I'd like to do that. Working on that daily project and just trying to push, you know, my work as far as I can. I'm hoping that I get a couple of my dream clients this year. I've been targeting people with my promo. So I still have a bunch more to send out. So hopefully I can send out some more and I'll finally get a bite and see what happens. But other than that, you know, I'm going to Creative South in April. I'm very excited about
that. We're looking forward to seeing you there.
I know. I'm so excited to see everybody. I love that conference. And I think Megan's even flying in from California. So I'm really excited.
Very cool.
And then I have Icon in July in Austin. And actually, everything works out real well because the first week of July, I will be in Austin for Icon. The following week is my best friend's wedding. So I'm just going to take 2 weeks off work.
Nice.
Yeah, because the whole week of her wedding, I know is going to be more than likely me helping prep because I'm the maid of honor. And, you know, I want to make sure she is as stress-free as possible. And I'm going to have to do, I think I'm doing signs and stuff for the wedding and a lot of the artistic collateral. And so I've got that. And then I'm hoping to make maybe like 1 or 2 trips to New York this year. I'd like to go to Illustration Week in November. I think that would be a lot of fun. And then maybe one in like May, maybe if I can slip away, go for a weekend or something or find an ADC event to attend, just something to get away and do that. And then, you know, other than that, you know, outside of work, just, you know, I've got a figure skating competition next month. I've got a figure skating test in March. I'm testing 5 different things, including 2 to 3 of the dances. And I plan on hopefully testing every test they have this year. They get 4 total.
Cool.
So, yeah. So I'm giving myself a pretty big load this year, but we'll see how that goes.
That sounds good, though. So where can people find you online?
They can find me. I got a website, Etsy, social media all over. Social media handles for Dribbble, Instagram, and Twitter are all Shauna Parmesan. Parmesan is a joke from high school because no one could spell my last name.
And Chesin can be a little tough to get.
Yes. I'm proud. You said it right.
I practiced.
Bravo. And then my website is shaunaparmesan.com, but also Shauna Lynn Illustration will take you there as well. Okay. And then Etsy shop is etsy.com/shop/ShaunaLynnPanchesin.
Okay. And I'll link to all of these in the show notes too.
Cool. So. Yeah. The Etsy shop is actually really fun. I've got a couple pins up there for sale. I'm hoping to get some more prints done this year, get those up. And I've got the children are running.
You've got the kids outside. I hear them.
Go away.
Oh, Teddy heard him too.
Yeah. Come on, baby. Yeah, they, but I'm working on getting some more like digital prints up there. I'm trying to open up my,
passive income stream.
Yeah. Kind of give, open up to another demographic too. You know, those that don't really want to spend the full, you know, $20 or whatever on a, on an actual printed print, and they just want something to download and print on their desk. Mm-hmm. I've got that. I'm trying to put some like, you know, desktop, designs up there that they can download for a couple bucks, and coloring book sheets. That's something I do want to do this year, is do a coloring book.
I was about to say, with the coloring book stuff, I think you should put them all together in one big book.
Yeah, I think that's what I may do. And I think each season, like I did for in December, I released that Simply Havin Wonderful Christmas Time sheet, and I just offered it up for free. I'm thinking I might just like every season just do one and just put it out there and just kind of, you know, something to entice people to come to my site.
Cool.
Yeah, because I don't have that one for sale on my Etsy because you can't do free things on there. But I was able to set.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I was able to set it up on my website in the shop I have there, because you can set it up for $0. But unfortunately, you still have to go through the credit card checkout with that. So there's a link for people to download. Uh-huh. But that way, if they purchase something, they can add that on and not worry about having to. It'll all come together.
Oh, cool.
But yeah.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me. And we like to end the podcast by saying, go out and hug some nets.
I like it.
This episode of the Creative South Podcast was brought to you by Epicurrents the Montoose. Request an invite today at montoose.com.